Hello, this is John Meadows, and this is a special episode of Classic Camera Revival with part two of my discussion with E6 Development Master David Nardi.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
I want to talk about your work now.
Mm-hmm.
And for the work that you do for yourself, what's the appeal of slide film?
When I was getting into photography, 18, 19, I started like everybody else. Started with black and white, messed around in the darkroom and, at the school, high school labs, the college labs. And I really enjoyed photography. I was actually destined to be an animator, Disney style classical animator. And then that world went to digital. And I wasn't as interested in it as I thought, because I've been drawing my whole life. Then I got there and finally, sat at the animator's table and doing the animations. I was like, nah, this is not really me. Then I discovered photography and got all excited. And then shortly after, I played around with black and white, color took has the interest. But what really excited me was slide, because slide, when you shoot it, you just see it. You just see it right away. You don't need to worry about prints. And even then, no matter where you got these prints from, they could be from a professional lab, they could be from Walmart, Costco, God knows, they were all terrible. And it never really showed me, the negs never really showed me what was possible. Like, I know the neg has much more latitude. I know there's a softer look to it. There are things about it that are definitely better. But there are also things about slide that are definitely better. So you can have that argument, right? And for me, I just, and then when I saw that the professionals were shooting slide, this is how they published. The publishers loved it because they were like, no, we see a slide. This is what it is. Put it in the magazine, put it in the book, get her, and there was no questions. There was just, you had to be good. You had to know what you were doing to get that image on that light table and attract a potential editor or someone. And at the time, yes, I was interested in doing this professionally. But by the time, I rolled around, I got a few small things published. I was in a couple of magazines, no articles, sadly, even though I almost got one almost went through for a UK magazine. I think it was Popular Photography. But from that point on, I was hooked. I was just like, no, it's slide film. This is great. Then digital came, and everybody, the wow factor over digital and the whole bit. And in the beginning, it truly sucked, and now it's really good. But it's for me, it's still not good enough. Mentally, I'm just not interested in it. I never have been. I have digital cameras. It's not that I don't know how to use them. It's not that I put them on the computer. I mess around. I edit. But if I were to compare the amount of stuff that I printed and finished on film versus printed and finished on digital, it's a no-brainer. I would say 99% of the stuff I've ever printed is film-based. And I just find with digital, I just don't see the whole process through. I don't have the interest. I don't want to sit in front of a computer. God knows I do that enough for many other things. And with E6, you don't have to. You just have it. There it is. It looks great. And yes, nowadays you have to scan it. You have to, digitize and for workflow purposes. But at the end of the day, that's still not my main focus. Like obviously, maybe I'm saying that wrong. I'm not there. Yes, I'm shooting it to create a nice image and something that is printable. But it doesn't mean I'm going to take it home and print it right away. Like sometimes I'll sit on it for a year or two, like it gets crazy. And then you have all this film lying around and you're like, okay, now I got to start focusing on what I want to put in. But when I do finally scan it and I do finally sit down and clean it up and basically make it look like the slide, because no computer can hold any kind of this color gamut. It's just the color gamut of slide, and being that it's a transparent medium, is completely different than the properties on a monitor, let alone on a reflective properties of a print. you're never going to get that same kind of depth of color. And Lord knows I try to the best of my digital abilities. And yes, the prints look impressive on their own. I do have a wide format printer, an Epson, well, it's aged now, but I do have some nice profiles for it, a 9600 44-inch printer. I do use the Epson flatbeds, which everyone's like, oh, they can only do 8x10s. It's like, no, they can do bigger. If you have big film, they'll do just fine. The Epson V750 is what I use. And, they give you beautiful print. The prints are beautiful. Like, yeah, sometimes the shadows are a little blocked up more than I like. I try to finesse it out in Photoshop or do a second pass of a scan or whatever. And you can get certain things out of it. It is kind of sad that even these scanners sometimes can't get even what's on the limited latitude of the slide. But as long as you don't have the slide on the light table right next to your print, it's still going to look great. So I've made concessions, let's put it that way.
You used the expression before, just like Christmas. And to me, right, like in my limited E6 development process, I remember the first time I tried a sheet of 4x5, and I took it out of the tank, and it's like, wow. And I don't get that, even like, developing a black and white print and seeing it come up before your eyes is neat, or take the negatives out. Yeah. But there was just something about seeing almost like seeing the completed picture just come out of the tank. It's
exactly
unique.
Exactly. It's very beautiful. And it's the reason why I took to larger formats almost right away. Like, I started with 35, like most people, quickly went to a Rolleiflex TLR, which I still have. It actually needs some TLC, but let's not get into that. Well, we can if you like the cameras that I own, because it's absolutely ridiculous. I can actually probably have a mini museum of my own. But
there are a few of us like that in film photography.
I'm sure there are. But I do use them. That's the thing. I have, uncoded range finders like Zeiss Icons and all sorts of stuff. But I use them. And I enjoy it, but professionally, yeah, there's a few cameras I reach out for. For example, the Pentax 672 for my 6.7s. Obviously, for 4.5, 8x10, I have a camera that probably nobody has, Bender Photographic. I don't know if anybody's heard of that. They're no longer in business, thanks to digital, but they were build-it-yourself cameras, made of cherry wood, brass hardware, very beautifully crafted. Again, you're the one who's ultimately going to put it together. So if you screw that up, good luck. So for me, being very technically orientated, I took a lot of time to put it together. It took me a month for each camera to build. I started with 4.5 when I was 25. If anybody would like to know, I'm 39 now. But yeah, I from the Rolleiflex, basically, I wanted to experiment in medium format. I said, oh man, all these slides look beautiful. Wow. 75 millimeter Zenitar 3.5 lens, beautiful lens, a little soft on the edges, but very nice, very sharp.
Well, I've got it over the Zenitar. It's a great lens.
Yeah. And that's one thing I like about slide too. Slide holds nothing back. If you take a picture and you don't get it, or if something's wrong with your camera, slide's going to tell you right away. It's going to look, here's your problem right here. And you're like, wow, okay, got it, you go ahead and you fix it. There's a story I can actually tell you, which I probably won't, just because it is negative and I don't want to be a negative guy. But I did have a very bad customer experience when I was doing it on my own. And it was too bad, because it was his first two rolls he's ever shot of film, let alone E6. And he blamed me for the processing. But I had to dig it out of him to find out, I'm telling you what is wrong. And I know you're using a Hasselblad. I know this because I can see where your light leaks are coming from and why it's happening. Like, I've used enough cameras to know sometimes even what camera it is. And he was like, well, no, that can't be. I just got this. Yeah, new used, you just got it. But I don't know what condition it's in. I don't know. Unless we have a meet and greet and show and tell. And anyway, he was adamant about saying, oh, that's it. I'm going to blacklist you. I'm going to tell all my friends and blah, 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 blah. And at a point, I just had to go, yeah, sure. Whatever you want. Like, I was never really mad. I was trying to actually help him to say, look, anytime you have a magazine that has to marry to a camera, I work in the film business, for God's sakes. Each magazine could be a potential problem.
Yeah.
This was in the days of film, motion picture film. Like, we'd have a whole roll of film. You know how much that cost? a whole roll of film would come back from the lab the next day. You know, it might cost $400 a roll going in. Coming out, it's worth tens of thousands of dollars once you have the actors and all the locations and all the bullshit. And it's like, ooh, that mag is bad. Yeah, it happens. You know, now in this case, you know, I told them, you got to check your seals. How do you shoot? Do you shoot with the dark slide out? Because if the dark slide stays out, that little piece of felt that sits in there, let alone in 4x5 and 8x10 sheet film holders, that's not light tight. People think it's light tight. It's not. It's light tight for a certain amount of time. You know, so when for example, landscapes, I learned that the hard way too when I started shooting 4x5. I'd be like, okay, put the 4x5 in, take the dark slide out. We're doing a portrait, so obviously the dark slide and the felt is sitting up out into the wide world, the sky is what I'm trying to say. And you know, you sit there, you're waiting for that moment, waiting for the people to leave, waiting for the clouds to come a certain way. Click, yeah, got this. Go back, develop. 2 weeks later, ooh, nice big streaky flares. So what did I learn? Take the dark cloth, put it over the camera. Once you take that dark slide out, put the dark cloth over the camera, and then you could sit there as long as you want, waiting for your moment. Otherwise, you know, I'd say you got, I don't know, I never really experimented, but I'd say you got a couple of minutes or so, depending on how bright of a day it is, right? You know, to expose your film, and obviously slower speeds, you're safer than higher speeds, but yeah, this was a thing, and you know, it was disappointing, but when I did find out he was new, I kind of had to throw it in his face, like in a nice way. I said, look, man, yeah, I can't believe you're giving me all these gears. And now that I know that you're actually a brand new photographer, and he was talking about he was a professional for so long and he's been doing this forever. And I did some of my own research. I looked at his website. Everything he's ever shot was digital, portrait photographer, whatever. And then, yeah, I finally got it out of him. He's like, yeah, well, these are my first rolls. It's like, well, there you go. You don't really understand film yet. You know, and I wasn't trying to be a dick, but he just totally took it all the wrong way and got really upset. And how can it be the camera? I just spent, you know, whatever. I mean, Hasselblads hold their value, I'm sure. But you know what? Speaking of that, I have a Fuji GF670 rangefinder, which is a beautiful camera for like handheld
like
street work.
It's Texas Leica?
Yeah, it's they made two of them. They limited runs are 6.7.
Mm-hmm.
They made a wide and a normal. The normal one, I have both because I'm crazy. but the normal one, it's a folder, so the lens folds in, so mm-hmm. It's fairly compact. And you unfold it, it's got, you know, aperture priority metering, a very good meter built into it, very precise focus, the whole bit. But anyway, I bought it new from B&H Photo in 2012 or 2011. Took it on a trip to Newfoundland, brand new, out of the box. Brand new. I'm a camera assistant professionally, so you think I would test these things before I go, right? No, I don't need to test it. It's brand new. Went to Newfoundland, came back, processed all my 120. I can laugh about it now. Everything was out of focus. Like, what? So the rangefinder was out of alignment with, you know, the film plane, obviously. So I got it fixed under warranty, and that was all fine and good. However, not before I ruined, you know, 20, 30 rolls. I tend to shoot a lot, yes. But they weren't all bad. I mean, some of them were fine, depending on how deep the focus was. But there were things I was shooting, like, cliff sides with birds and stuff and you know, setting the focus far away. And I'm like, ooh, it looks like everything is closer. That's really strange. Like, I should be at infinity here. There should be a lot of depth of field. And it, you know, obviously I was out of alignment. So there's a lesson for everybody. You always test your camera. New, used, doesn't matter. Yeah.
Especially, and there's certain brands of cameras or older models that are famous for seals failing. Mm-hmm. Like I got burned once. I got an RV67, and the seals were horrible on it, and I lost a photo session because of it. Everything was ruined.
Yeah, and it happens to all of us. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, but this, you know, again, this one guy couldn't stand that he lost some images, and it was all my fault. And while we're on that topic too, I've had a lot of that, not a lot, but I had a fair amount of it, and I knew it was coming. Like I knew when I started this, I said, okay, I'm going to have customers that aren't going to be happy. I'm going to have new customers, which you do have to educate and be patient. And I have been, I will admit that. Some of them, especially the new ones, they thought that it's film is like digital. You can manipulate each frame individually. So I would literally get an email like, oh, I like what you did on frame 36, but you know, frame 11 was kind of dark. How come we couldn't fix that?
Oh man.
And yeah, really. And you know, you jaw drop looking at your computer screen. You're like, did
really?
I just read that? How do I explain this to the layman? And this is what I found was the challenge. How do you explain something to somebody that does not understand the process? And this is partially even that Hasselblad Light Leak guy, it was the same thing. It's like, how do you explain something to him that he doesn't understand and he won't accept? So, you know, and he goes, oh, you're losing me as a customer. I'm like, fine, no problem. Right? He goes to another lab. Oh, they'll finish that story. Goes to another lab. And I even suggested, go to another lab. You don't need me then. I'm not here. Like, if I lose customers, which, yes, will happen inevitably, I'll know it's not because of me. And I'm also the type of personality that I will admit, if I made a mistake or I screwed up the film, something disastrous happened, I'll let you know. I'll feel terrible about it, but I'll let you know. But if I'm educating you saying, look, your film is old. I don't know if you put it in the back of a car or where, you know, where it's been sitting or it got rolled over 100 times. I can't fix that. No processing can fix that. Like, I got my share of rolls even yesterday, pink, purple, green, yellow, orange. I can't fix it. Most of the film that I'm still getting from a lot of customers is outdated, expired, old film. I even got Blacks E6 film. I've never seen that before. Oh. I was like, Blacks. Of course, I develop them. They come out and they're completely faded, you know, and greenish and stainy and weird. I'm like, oh my God. So now these customers are going to get these images back and they go, oof, E6 it. This guy sucks. Like, no, you got to help me out. Buy some fresh film. Let me develop it. And then you'll see what's possible. But I can't fix, you know, essentially a film that's broken. And there's so many variables with film. And I'm sure you've had many podcasts on, you know, film longevity, storing, quality, the whole bit. And, you know, this is how it is. Film is an organic medium. It ages like everything else. And if you don't use it at a certain point, it's just going to go bad. And the freshest chemistry is not going to help that.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with shooting outdated film. You can get a certain kind of look to it, but you have to go into it with your eyes open and saying, you know, be open to the element of surprise.
Exactly. And I'm totally fine with that. Like, I love the, you know, the so-called Lomo look and all that other stuff. I don't personally do it a lot in my own work. I do here and there. Like, the Lomography 110 is actually, I don't know where they're getting their film made, but as soon as I, and this is how nutty I am about E6, I tend to always go after the formats that are hardest to acquire. So when, you know, we're 35-120, we're pretty safe with E6. So you're like, in a small way, you're like, yeah, I'm kind of bored with that. Okay, sure. You know, but 4.5 is harder to get. 8x10 is really hard to get. 110 didn't even exist for the longest time. Then finally Lomography releases it. They first with their black and white, which I did play around with and I really enjoyed it. Then they brought out the color neg and the E6. And I was like, oh my God. And all they advertise with the E6 is cross-processing for C41, which I get. It does a wonderful thing. But, and I've cross-processed it myself. But I wanted to use it as E6. And it's got a green base. It's got a bit of a yellow greeny thing going on, but it still has some nice colors. And these little miniature slides, it's just so fascinating to look at on the light table. It's impressive. I just, oh my God. And so, yeah, if, like everything else in my little mini film fridge here, I've got a small supply of 110 ready to go at any time with my Pentax 110, smallest SLR on the planet.
Gorgeous little camera.
And I have all the lenses. I've got all 5 or 6 or 7 that they made. See, I don't even know the numbers anymore, but I have them all, including the zoom. And it's great. I mean, from time to time, sometimes it's a journey of, oh, I just want to take out this camera today, or we're going bike riding on the island. Let me take that. Let me take just to change it up, just to play around, just to, you know, but obviously I'm not going to go and, you know, put the 110 on a tripod and set up on a landscape in the mountain. Like, I'm not going to do that, right? I'm going to take the 4.5 or the 8x10. But each camera I find has a purpose, and this is why we become, you know, camera hoarders, because each camera has its own reason for being. And in the beginning, I was like, oh no, but 30, yeah, I got 35, I'm good. Wait a second. Oh no, 120. Okay, now I'm good. Now I'm good. No. 4 or 5. See, and then it just goes from there.
So what I'll have to do, can you get 16mm reels?
Yeah,
because I've got a slitter, I haven't used them yet, but I've got a couple of 16mm sub mini cameras, and I've got a film slitter that can slit down to 16mm. It's almost like a challenge accepted moment.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's funny. I have I don't know what kind of slitter you have, but I do have one. I've never used it but just before Lomography released their E6 film, I was so close to just grabbing some 35 or 120 and it was 120, right. And slitting it myself and then trying to figure out a way how to put it in these little telephone cartridges and get it going. And then Lomography said, no, here's some E6 110. I'm like, oh, fantastic. Now 110, as everybody may or may not know, it is 16mm width.
Yeah.
So it will fit, you know, in the reels that I have. Okay. Now the reels that I have only accept, I would say, the length, I don't know what that length is, but the length
not
of
huge.
A cartridge of 110, which is, 24 frames, whatever length that is.
Probably so less than a foot,
if there's
think.
A surplus, what's that?
Probably less than a foot.
Yeah, no, it's a little longer than that. Yeah. I do have, you know what, I have 110 line around here somewhere. I'm not going to look for it now, but it's probably 2.5 feet, I think.
Okay.
So that somewhere in that realm. But anyway, 16mm width, I can develop that. So that's totally doable. It's been a fun journey. I'm glad I can share it with people now. I'm hoping that it stays consistent. I mean, the big thing, and I told this at Downtown Camera too, is we don't, when I get busy, because when I start going back to work, which will be actually soon, it's going to be harder for me to process. And obviously, I still got to live a life. I still got to do laundry. I still got to eat. I still got to do all these things.
Sleep occasionally.
And sleep occasionally. Yeah, that would help. So, you know, I'll do my best for everybody. But I think we're also in this world now where people are willing to wait. Like even there's, you get the odd that don't understand it, but unfortunately this is the way that it goes now. Like I know there was another startup trying to do E6 literally just before Christmas. I think he did a Kickstarter. Image Foundry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know they were doing E6. I don't know his whole story, but they were doing E6 or they were sending it out. Then they tried to commercialize it, and unfortunately they asked for maybe 10,000, 12,000, and they got like 1,000. They didn't get anything. And whereas my advantage was I've always had these machines, and I always, I've since then added drums and reels and some other surplus things that I needed. But including, and this is very important, a battery backup system. So Jobo, these machines, they did make a battery backup for these machines specifically. However, to find these batteries, and I'm sure even the batteries themselves are no good, and what they're made of is probably not even close to what we're using today. So I've never found one, but I decided not to go that route anyway, because again, the batteries would be a big variable, especially in this day and age, because these machines are a lot older. So what I have is a power hub system from really the only supplier I know of, which is Xantrex. And they make, it's an automatic battery backup system. So I run AC through it. As soon as the power cuts, even for a millisecond, the battery kicks in. And it keeps the process going, because the biggest problem is obviously, as you know, with a machine, if I lose power, everybody's work is dead. And I certainly don't want that to happen. So that variable is eliminated. I run tests every so often, and I might as well tell you this story. Even Downtown Camera doesn't know it yet, but they'll hear it now. Last week when I was doing a run, I checked my battery after I was finished some of the run, and you know, just did a random spot check. I said, oh, let's just check it. And it's a new battery. I mean, it's a year and a half old, brand new, the system anyway. Like, and it failed. I was like, what? So I called 2 days on the phone with the supplier, the manufacturer, the whole bit. They're like, yeah, you got a lemon. You know, 1 to 2% of our machines, you know, fail or this, that, the other. And I'm like, oh, that's fantastic, because, you know, I can't carry on. And for all I know, this probably could have been dead while I was processing. So thankfully, the power never cut out, because it does happen here and there, and even the, you know, the most robust household. So anyway, it took a week. I got another one. Unfortunately, I had to pay again for it. That was a bit of a, even though they acknowledged that I had a lemon, and I ran the test that they told me to run, and I did it all, and I showed proof and the whole bit, and they were like, yeah, there's really nothing we can do except give you a small discount. And I was like, wow, okay, well, this is what I need anyway to run my business, because I'm not going to develop any more film knowing that this machine is not working. So I got the other one. Again, I ran it, and it will complete a process on the battery. It'll do two runs before the battery dies out if it ran 100% on battery. So I'm fully safe knowing that, you know, if I lose power throughout a process, I can just, you know, this will kick in and do its thing. Now, again, I'm always checking it. In this one case, it caught me, but, especially now, I'm like always just going to just do the security check right away every single time now, because knowing that that could just fail at random like that. Because the display, by the way, there's a display on it, and it shows none of that, right? It doesn't show any of it. So you have to do a certain thing to it to go, is it still working, right? Because you're not going to find out until that critical moment. So, and I told them this. I said, guys, this is, you know, the people that would store it, especially, you know, usually they use it to run sump pumps or emergency things. That's what it's kind of designed for. You know, 5 years later or 6 years later, and then the thing fails, like, people aren't going to know. You know, so a 1 year warranty really doesn't cut it. But
yeah,
anyway,
what's the point?
What's the point? Yeah, don't even have a warranty, you know? So, but anyway, it's a wonderful system when it obviously works, like every other system on the planet. And that's my peace of mind, because I don't want to, like, if I lost work, it's one thing, but if I lost somebody else's work, it would actually probably destroy me, you know? So, there you go.
David, I think I'm going to ask one more question. Have you gotten some really oddball film or stuff that you said, wow, this looks interesting?
Yeah, I have. Let's start with that 127 roll that I got. I wasn't even convinced that it was E6. I was like, really? E6? 127? I actually kept the roll, and I kept the paper, right? The paper backing. It's much like 120. It has a paper backing, and, you know, you cut the film out of it. Yeah, it was V6, and I processed it. It was a very aged. There was 2-3 usable pictures on it, and again, they needed, you know, some work. But you leave it as is. You show it as is. It's what it is, right? But what else did I get? I got some strange rolls. I mean, there were. I can't recall the manufacturer now. But a lot of stuff I haven't seen. And again, the bulk of the work I'm still getting is used and expired. Like I got MS, remember that? The Fuji MS 100 to 1000 pushable film. It was like Fuji's attempt at saying, look, we have it, almost like a digital camera. Look, you can change ISOs and just develop as you, okay, well, to a degree, but sure. And I had, what was the other one? I think I got some of the 16, wasn't there a 1600?
Well,
it's a very high speed one.
I remember I shot Ektachrome once in the 80s, for Ektachrome 400, and pushed it. It had it pushed to 1600.
Yeah. Yeah, I had some weird stuff. But all in all, I mean, it was all doable. Or, you know, once in a while, I'd have to call the customer, again, when I was doing it myself, and say, hey, guys, what, you know, what is this, or is this, I can't remember the questions I would ask, because if it obviously said E6, I would just do it, but maybe some of them didn't really let on that exact information, and I just had to verify. One of them I remember was 4x5 sheets. The guy gave me 4x5, He personally dropped off all his film holders. He was getting into it. He didn't understand. I said, okay, well, next time, I said, I don't want to be liable for your film holders and things going wrong. And I said, right away, even as I took him out of his hand, I said, look, these sheet film holders are in really rough shape. I can't even guarantee that the images are going to come out flare free or focus. Focus is another thing, because obviously even yourself, you could screw that up. But they were in bad shape. So I already told him, I said, expect light leaks. And that's what he got. But I said, you know, next time you put it in a box, you know, once you empty a box, put them in there, and this is how you do it. And then this way you can take your holders and you can keep shooting. And it keeps me from somebody saying, oh, it's your fault that you ruined all my film because you ruined my holders. What did I do? Oh, yeah. So when I got them, I didn't pay attention at the time. And then I'm out there developing, and then I get to them and I'm like, I remember he had a mix of C41 and E6, but the labels on the four or five holders were black and white. There was some black and white and the rest was C41. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense to what he told me that he gave me. So I went and checked. And of course, you know, the notch code, you could feel the notches. I'm like, wow, this is so not E6. So, you know, I told him and he said, oh yeah, that's some of the film was already in there. I'm like, wow. Okay. And he says, oh, the original writing on the holders, I never changed. I'm like, yeah, okay. So I had to give him that lesson too, right? Tell him you got to write what's inside of these things, because I don't know, short of me going on a hunt for searching for codes. Like, I know what certain codes feel like, the notches, but some of them I don't know what they are. I should say a lot of them, because there's so many, right? And so that was interesting, but we got through it, we figured it out, and a warning for hopefully future customers to not let that happen. You know, learn how to load and label 4x5, 8x10 holders. And then when you do take them out, you know, put them in boxes that are labeled that say, oh, and this is one thing. People would write down the exact film type they have. Like, some people would send me, you know, they have C41, but the, you know, Portra, I can't even think of anything else right now, but, or E6, you know, Velvia, Provia, whatever. And it's like, no, that all that doesn't matter. The speeds don't matter. None of it matters like black and white. It's just, it's E6 or it's C41. That's all you have to do. So you can take whatever kind of E6 film, put it in the one box, and then whatever kind of C41 film and put it in another box. That's it. And at least it'll get developed properly. Short of wanting to be pushed, normal development is normal development across the board for any compatible film. Let's say E6, because that's what we're talking about. But there are people that don't know that, and they think that it's like black and white, that it's different for every single film type and speed that you have.
So, David, with E6 film getting harder and harder to find, seemingly, what film stocks do you use, and what would you recommend people to have a look at?
Well, I'm strictly a Fuji guy, other than the creative formats, like from Mammography, the 110, all my serious work. If ever I'm going out to shoot, no matter what the camera size is, I use Fuji. Fuji is really the only manufacturer right now that offers all the formats. Now Provia 100F is what I would suggest that new users to E6 start with. I know paying full price for a roll of E6 is expensive, but a lot of film is nowadays, even C41. But Provia is your general purpose, natural color, fine grained, 100 speed film. It's a lot more forgiving than Velvia. The colors aren't harsh. You could shoot in bright sun. You could shoot people, and you're going to get nice natural skin tones. Velvia, for people, I would stay away from, especially Velvia 100. I'm not a big fan. I know some people are. I still don't like the palette. I still don't like the way it's so not Velvia. Velvia 50 is the Velvia to use if you want to know what Velvia was and or is. But I would suggest before that, everyone play around with Provia, because Provia gives you a little more leeway. It's a little more forgiving. It is pushable up to, like, I can only do one stop. I know it can go two stops. My machines can only support the one. And it looks great. I mean, it doesn't have any real flaws other than the flaw of you exposing it incorrectly. And it's offered in all the formats. So from 35 all the way to 8x10, Fuji still makes all the sizes. And Velvia 50 is the next one that I would try. Now, unfortunately, they only offer 35 and 120. They stopped sheet film, about a couple of years ago, I would say. I remember they stopped for a time, they reformulated, then they brought it back. Now, due to lack of demand again, they stopped. But I do know it is available at Japan Exposures in Japan. They still make it for the Japanese market, but expect to pay over double what it costs over here. So, for example, if you want a box of 8x10, you're looking at close to $500, $450 before shipping, and for 20 sheets, it's ridiculous. It's even rich for my blood, and I like spending money on film. So it's kind of sad because it is very beautiful. Like Velvia, when used properly, is incredible. It's just incredible. You're never going to see anything on the light table like Velvia 50. It doesn't matter what stocks are out there now, and I'll get into some of the other manufacturers making it. Velvia 50 on the light table, especially large format, is mind-blowing. But it has to, again, it has to be exposed a certain way. You have to, you know, really know your subject. You know, have a nice balance of things, obviously, you know, compositionally, you know, not too much darks, not too much light, not too much whatever. It depends, you know, obviously each frame is going to be different, but depending what you're looking at and what you're doing, when you stick it on the light table, it's gorgeous. And I remember I shot an 8x10 recently of a field of, what was it now? Flowers in the spring. I believe they were marsh marigolds, I believe. And found a nice composition, some dead logs, you know, strewn about in the whole bed, and nice foreground interest, the whole bit. And I shot Provia and Velvia, and the Provia does look fantastic. It looks very good. And if it's all I had, I'd be completely pleased. But as soon as I put the Velvia next to it, it just knocked its socks off. Even Provia, it just said, no, Provia, get out of here. Get off the light table. And it that's the one I scanned. That's the one I just went, yep, this is the one that's going to make the print. Now, that being said, Velvia is finicky. So I find, for example, when you have a lot of green, a lot of a certain tone, it tends to not find the subtleties as well as Provia does. Provia finds a lot of subtlety in different color or different ranges of the same mm-hmm. color. Is that how I'm saying? Am I saying it right?
Not like anyway. That. Slight variations in the hue and the
in the hue of a similar tone. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you have various shades of green or, mm-hmm. or different types of trees and stuff like that. Provia is really going to pick it out and just give you all that subtlety. And it's very good at recording the dark. Again, we're talking for a slide film. Like, yeah, it's not a negative film, but for a slide film, it really collects your darks. Now I'm losing my train of thought here, but does it much better than Velvia. But again, when you know how to use Velvia, it's gorgeous. And it's too bad, especially in sheet film, that it's now very difficult to get. It's still out there, but just very difficult to get. Now, so as far as what else is out there, I wrote a blog, or I started writing a blog, because e6it.ca, but it's a new site. I made it recently, you know, announcing that I'm back. So if you go on that site, you can click over to the blog, and the first post I did was E6 film availability, because obviously, yeah, I'm back developing film, but where can you get it? And that's where a lot of people don't know. So, you know, I've done my research. I'm obviously more aware of what's out there than, you know, the average person. So Fujifilm's at the top, the Provia 100F, the Velvia 50, the Velvia 100. Now 100, again, I'm not a fan, but you can get that in all sizes from 35 to 8x10 still. And this also includes meaning purchasing it from the States, because I know you can get it here, but it's much harder to get here in Canada, and not everyone stocks it. So on that, in the defense of Downtown Camera, who's really trying to campaign for E6, and the reason why they got me back started again, they're starting to stock Fujifilm, and they're also going to stock, actually this is what I was going to put in the interview too, because I just talked to her today. Her name's Claudia. She's kind of the marketing, you know, I don't even know her exact title, but she created this whole setup, and even at the mercy of some of the people there at Downtown Camera, the owners weren't that interested, or they didn't want to fully get in. They were like, I don't know if we want to add that to our business. And she was like, no, we should. And we should, they want to basically be, and I think they are now, the only place in Toronto where you can get E6, E41, black and white, and have it all done there as well. Now, yeah, I'm developing for them, but they've hired me out to farm the work out locally, because I'm really all that exists here in Toronto. And now they're stocking, I believe they always have stocked 35 and 120 Fuji, but now they're going to stock 4.5. They already have a stock running, and they're going to special order 8x10.
Oh, that's very cool.
So for people that want 8x10, they'll have it. And the last place that I knew of that was stocking any sort of E6 film was, they're over on Film Plus Photo Supply.
Film Plus Photo Supply.
But they stopped. They're over on Davenport.
Yeah, I know the
region there. I forget. Yeah, so they stopped a couple of years ago too. But now Downtown Camera, it seems to be the it place for getting all your E6, getting your E6 fix. How about that? And yeah, so now the other thing she wrote here is, I don't know if people have heard of Film Photography Project.
Yeah, FPP, the Retrochrome.
Yeah,
I've heard the rumor.
She's bringing in the Retrochrome and the Fujichrome CD-U2 tungsten film. So that's going to come into the store as well. Probably only available in 35 and or 120, but at least, you know, there's some variables you can play with there, which I will have to update my list already because I wasn't aware of that. But anyway, my first post, you'll see it. You'll see there's Fuji, there's Rolle, there's Lomography, there's Agfa Photo, and Ferrania, which is the Italian company from, they made motion picture stocks back in the day, and they were largely transparency. They are starting to make E6 still films. Now, they've been delayed. They were supposed to, I joined their Kickstarter, and I supported them, and they got,
me too.
They got well over the money they asked for, which is fantastic. And they're still in production. So right now they want to release a 35 and a 120 variable, like a Scotch Chrome, I believe it is. Scotch Chrome 100. It's based on it, but it's not going to be the exact same thing. And they're already talking about adding more roll and sheet formats in the future. So those guys will definitely get my money. And whatever keeps E6 going is what I'm going to spend money on. From time to time, I will put now blog posts, fulfilling anything related to E6, any news I hear or any hopefully unfortunate news I hear that, you know, should be known. And also, tips and tricks. For example, 120 film, when I get it, a lot of people don't realize that you have to fold over the flap before you seal it. There's a little flap at the end when you roll up your film, and it even says fold over on it, but a lot of people don't do it. They just make it all, roll it up on flush, and then they put the, in Fuji, the sticky on. Mm-hmm. And these are all technical terms, by the way. And then, so when you're in the dark, like with Fuji, it's easy because it has a little peel tab, but you don't want to loosen it while it's out in the open. So I try to, like, if I remember to cut it a little bit or be able to lift the corner of it so I can get it in the dark a lot easier. But oftentimes I forget. So I'm in the dark and now I can't find the edge.
Yeah.
And it drives me mad, especially when it's not a Fuji film. When it's a Fuji film, it's easy because it's got a tab that you can take off that little piece of,
the self-adhesive.
What's it even called? Adhesive. The tape.
Yeah, like that's the self-adhesive, as opposed to like the old lick and stick.
Yeah. The old technical. Lick and stick is such a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
So you're just like, okay, I'm already in there. I've already got film that is being has partially loaded, so I can't unzip the tent. So I have to now just do this in the dark frustratingly and get through the roll. So little tips like that. I'm going to probably do little short videos and add some stuff on the site so people could see, you know, how to properly label sheet film if that's what you're into. Again, I got a new customer that somebody that a previous customer that actually wrote to me and said, look, my wife did a crazy thing and she bought a 4x5 camera and plans to shoot E6. So when I hear stuff like that, I find that amazing. I'm like, yes, please go to town, have fun, do it. You have the money, you can afford it. And even if it's only from time to time, shoot some E6, because if this goes away, we're really losing something. There's nothing else like it. There's like negative is there for a reason. Slide is there for a reason. And same with black and white and black and white hand printing. Like all this stuff exists for a reason, because you can't do this any other way, especially a transparent medium like this. It's just, it's mind blowing. Like if people understood how mind blowing it is, even the technology of it and the fact that we have these crystal clear images that these manufacturers figured out how to build the film layers, and it's all chemical and light related. I'm talking silly now, but it's crazy. It's crazy the technology behind this that we don't even fully understand. But then when the latest digital camera comes, oh my God, that's so exciting. Yes, it is. It's exciting to a degree, but a digital sensor to a piece of film, film for me wins every time. I just find it amazing that we figured this out. That how did we figure this out? Digital is something we should have figured out first before film, but we figured film out first. It's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
We are so close to the Classic Camera Revival podcast guest meetup coming up in Hamilton, Ontario on Saturday, May the 7th, starting at 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can meet all the hosts of the show. That's Alex, Donna, Mike, and yours truly, John. We'll be meeting at 10 a.m. at the Ferguson Station Park in King Street East and Ferguson Street South. There is plenty of cheap parking throughout the downtown. One great thing about this day, it coincides with the Doors Open event in Hamilton, so there will be a lot of amazing photographic opportunities. Bring your cameras, bring your film, bring your enthusiasm. We hope to see you there. There is an event on Facebook, or if you have any further questions, you can drop me an email, jgmeadows@gmail.com. We want to see as many people there as possible, so put it in your calendar and we'll see you there.